Vayihyu chayei Sarah me'ah shana v'yesrim shana v'sheva shanim shenei chayei Sarah. Sarah's lifetime was 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years, the years of Sarah's life. OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Chayei Sarah. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 20th day of Mar Cheshvan, 5775, corresponding to November 13th. Let's go right to Tehillim, Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mi amod, ki imacha hasilicha lema'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi velidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, umeafela leora umishibud legeula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. I had the sad experience this week of attending a levaya, funeral of a good friend of mine, and I actually gave a hesped, the eulogy, at the funeral here in Jerusalem. There was a funeral the day before in New Jersey, where over 1,000 people attended. My friend's name was Dr. David Zigelman, Zichrono Livracha, a well-known pediatrician, and in northern New Jersey, and we went back a little over 49 years, and then I realized that it was really closer to 57 years, because we met as little children at a mutual cousin's wedding, and then in 1965, when we were both starting Yeshiva University, we were introduced by our cousins in common and became good friends. And even though there have been many years separation because of my aliyah and his not, we still picked up the pieces of the friendship whenever we saw each other as if no time had passed, which I believe is a true judge of a solid and good friendship. I just want to add one thought. One of the things that I focused on in the hesped was David's outrageous sense of fun. We had great fun times in college and beyond, and as serious and talented as a doctor that he was, he never ever lost that sense of fun, and it's more than a sense of humor. I choose the words on purpose, and just the an empty spot in my heart since Motzoi Shabbat when I heard the news, and then the Levaya on Monday. So his family is still sitting Shiva, not only his wife and children, but his parents as well, and sisters, and I extend my warm condolences to them all. Yehi Zichro Baruch. My apologies to you, the listeners. I don't usually hit such a heavy note in the show, certainly not at the beginning, but it had a very strong impact on me. And it really allows an obvious segue into Parshat Chaye Sarah. Chaye Sarah, all the commentaries note the irony in the opening words, Vayihiyu Chaye Sarah, the life or the lifetime of Sarah, and then 127 years, broken down into 127, and the commentaries explain that as well. And then the verse finishes with Shnei Chaye Sarah, sort of a duplication, and the fact that she has passed away, which is the very next words, Vatamat Sarah. So when you speak of somebody like Sarah Imenu, and you're telling about their passing, which is really what the Sedra is doing, it is not a misuse of the term, and maybe it's not even irony, therefore, to refer to the person's lifetime as if the person is still alive. We have a well-known statement, Tzadikim b'motam kru'im chayim. Righteous people, even in their death, are called alive. They continue to live. And the way we understand this, among many other ways of understanding this, is that a person's legacy continues, and that keeps the person alive and the person's memory alive to his family, to his friends, to his loved ones, and to those who knew him, or her, as in the case of Sarah Imenu. So that the parsha begins with the passing of Sarah, and the brief statement that Avraham both eulogized Sarah and cried for her, and then tended to her burial. And that portion is much more wordy, I don't know if that's the best word, than the brief statement of Vayavo Avraham Livkot Lisarah, Lispod Lisarah Vilivkota, to eulogize and to cry. We don't have any details of what he said in this eulogy, but we do have the details of his dealings with the people of Chet, and one among them named Ephron Hachiti, the Hittite, who had a piece of property that Avraham wanted for the burial of Sarah. That property was purchased by Avraham Avinu at a exorbitant fee, and it is an illustration in the Torah of the Jewish people's actual purchase of part of Eretz Yisrael, and not just God gave this land to us, which of course he did, and he promised it to Avraham. But it wasn't yet time for the descendants of Avraham to inherit the land and take it over as a heritage. So rather than wait, Avraham actually purchased a parcel of land. The irony there is that we're talking about Hebron and Kiryat Arba and Ma'arat HaMachpelah, all of which are very much in the controversy of who owns what and who belongs to where. And yet the Jewish claim is so rock solid. You know, when you're talking about Avraham purchasing it, then Arabs will say, we descend from Yishmael, and Yishmael was a son of Avraham also. But we look into the Torah, and the world can look into the Bible as well, and see where God specifically says, Ki v'Yitzchak yikarei lecha Zara. It is through Isaac will your legacy continue? So it's not just given to Avraham. It's given to Avraham, from him to Yitzchak, through him to Yaakov, and then on to the Jewish people. And that makes a very important statement. It's very easy to go between the Sedra, which happened many thousands of years ago, and today, because the question of who are the rightful owners of the land of Israel are kicked around by the world and debated all the time. Aside from the problems that we have with Arabs trying to delegitimize the Jewish claim to the land of Israel and to the city of Jerusalem, I believe a worse problem is the fact that Jews are swallowing the propaganda of the world and of the Arabs and question whether this land is truly ours or not. I believe that far more serious to us is the fact that many fellow Jews feel guilty about occupying Arab lands, when that is a public relations ploy on the part of the Arab world and much of the rest of the world to join in that delegitimization. This land is not occupied by Jews. It has been reclaimed by the Jewish people, who were given this land thousands of years ago in perpetuity. That means forever. So it doesn't matter who was living in certain parts of this country in the last couple of hundred years, and that's all it is. It matters as to whose land this is. I don't think that we needed the legitimacy given by the United Nations, or before them the League of Nations, but it adds to the picture. This land is Jewish land, all of it. And we have ample sources that indicate that it is a terrible travesty to give over any of that land to anyone else. When we were overcome by enemy armies and exiled from the land, and they conquered the land, we didn't have much to say about it. But now that we have returned to the land, and now that wars have deposited back into our hands the land which has always been ours, always I mean from the promises to the patriarchs, then we need to be confident and firm in our position that all of Jerusalem belongs to the Jewish people. It is the capital of Israel. It is the capital of the Jewish world. It is the heart of the Jewish life and soul. And not so for the Arabs. Arabs who pray on the Temple Mount turn their backs to the place of the Beit HaMikdash and face Mecca. Their number one city is Mecca. Their number two city is Medina. Their Quran does not mention Jerusalem at all, where, Lahavdil, our Tanakh mentions it many hundreds of times. It's an old theme, but it comes alive every time you get to a Sedra like Chayei Sarah, where you see that first purchase of land, followed many years later by the conquest of Yehoshua and beyond. Avraham Avinu made his first appearance in the Torah, so to speak, at the very end of Parshat Noach, when he was born, when he married Sarah, then Avram and Sarai. Lech Lecha and Vayera are totally about Avram Avinu and Sarah. And in the beginning of Chaye Sarah, we see Avraham's life's tasks winding down. Sarah dies. Avraham tends to her burial. And now we're up to the point, which is the major theme of Parshat Chaye Sarah, of finding a suitable wife for his son Yitzchak, to be able to feel that the legacy will be carried on through the next generation and beyond. For this purpose, he tasks his servant Eliezer. Yitzchak is not allowed to leave the land of Israel, which at the time was Canaan. Avraham did not want his son to marry a Canaanite woman, and therefore the only option was to send his trusted servant to his hometown back in Haran and find the right girl. Eliezer, with 10 camels laden with all kind of goodies, heads out to Avraham's hometown, and when he arrives, he realizes he does not have a clue as to what he's supposed to do. So he prays to God, good thing. And he asks God to show him a sign that he's going to get the right girl. And he defines it as he comes to the well in the spring towards evening when the local girls are out drawing water for their homes. And he says, I will ask a girl for water, the one who will give me and draw water for my camels, which are a lot thirstier than I am, I imagine, will be the one that God chooses for me to fulfill my task to my master. Sure enough, the Torah testifies that Eliezer had hardly finished saying these words when onto the scene comes Rivka, daughter of Betuel, granddaughter of Avraham's brother Nahor, and sister of Lavan, which is significant for the future as well. And he asks for water, and she gives him to drink, and she draws for his camels. And he thanks God, and he gives her gifts, and then almost as an aside says, who are you? And when he finds out that she is truly a member of Avraham's family, he knows that he has succeeded. The Talmud tells us that he was not 100% Beseder, as the word in Hebrew is used, in giving this sign, especially since he didn't ask who she was before he gave her gifts and made assumptions. But even though he did not ask properly, he was answered properly. This is one of a total of three examples that the Mishnah and the Gemara discuss. And the story evolves. He goes, spends the night at Betuel's house, and he's questioned by Lavan, and by the next morning, the arrangements are made to take Rivka back with him to become the wife of his master Avraham's son, Yitzchak. There's a lot in the Torah's telling of it, and don't know if we have a lot of time to get into all of that. But one thing that I've always found interesting is that Lavan, who is not a righteous person in the perspective of the Torah, to say the least, is credited for giving Rivka a blessing on her way to meet her future husband. And that blessing is repeated at weddings, Jewish weddings, throughout history. And there's actually a song which I would like to play. The song is called Achotenu, It is from an album called Pessifas by Mickey Rosenbaum. And I'm not going to play it immediately because I don't have enough time in this first half of the show. But I will play it at the beginning of the second half. And what I'm going to play for you now is the song that I was going to use to start the second half. So instead, I'll finish the first half with it. It is based, of course it's not based, the words you'll recognize are of the title, very much related to the verse that we have towards the middle end of the Chayei Sarah. And that is when Yitzhak and Rivka get together. It says, "And Yitzhak brought her into the tent of Sarah his mother. He married Rivka. She became his wife, and he loved her. And thus was Isaac consoled after his mother." You'll recognize the tune right away. Listening to Torah Tibbetz Audio for Parshat Chayei Sarah. That, of course, was love and marriage, which is a theme in the Parsha. The song that I told you about, called Achotenu, is based on a pasuk where after they agreed and Rivka agreed that she will go with Eliezer, so the Torah tells us that they escorted Rivka, their sister, and her nurse, which we later find out her name was Devorah, as well as Avraham's servant and his men. They blessed Rivka and said to her, "Our sister, may you come to be thousands of myriads, and may your offspring inherit the gates of their foe," the gate of its foes. This, as I said, is a bracha that many people use at weddings to this day. And it came from the mouth of Lavan and family. So here it is, and then we'll talk more about Parshat Chayei Sarah.
Achoteinu atahi le'alfei revava ve'irash irash zarech et shar et shar sonai. Shine, 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 shine.
before I continue with Chayei Sarah, let me backtrack a little. When the entourage with Eliezer and Rivka were returning to Eretz Yisrael, the Torah tells us that Yitzchak had gone out into the field to commune with God. And the Gemara teaches us that we attribute the tefillah of the morning, Shacharit, to Avraham Avinu. And there's a verse that's quoted and another verse that indicates that standing means in prayer. And then with Yitzchak, Vayetze Yitzchak, Lasuach Basadeh, he went out to converse in the field, and another verse which teaches us that that means to pray. And in Parshat Vayetze, we will find another pasuk pair that indicates that Pigia means tefillah and attributes Arvit to Yaakov Avinu. This does not mean to suggest that Yitzchak composed the Mincha Davening. It is that we have biblical source for Yitzchak communing and conversing with God Lifnot Erev, before evening, late afternoon. And the Talmud, which wanted to present our tefillot not just as prayer which corresponds to temple service, it does, but it's a mistake to think that now that we don't have temple service, we have prayer, because prayer is so much more than that. A, it predates temple service, and that's the point of attributing to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov Shacharit, Mincha, and Arvit. And it's just plain more than sacrifices. The element of talking to God and asking Him for things and praising Him and thanking Him is something which gives prayer its eternal nature, eternal characteristics. And to Yitzchak, we associate Tfilat Mincha. Couple of words about Mincha. First, we'll start with the other davenings. Somewhere along the line, our sages had a great idea. They said, the Torah obligates us to recite the full three passages of the Shema every day, twice. Once in the morning and once at night. And our sages require us to daven three times a day, morning, afternoon, and evening. So somewhere along, as I said, somebody had a great idea of incorporating the fulfillment of the mitzvah of reciting Shema, packaged with brachot before it and after, as part of the Shacharit service. Shema serves as a wonderful lead into the Amidah. The Amidah serves as a wonderful cap to the Shema. Great partnership. And it works in Shacharit and it works in Arvit at night. Mincha, therefore, ends up being a relatively short prayer consisting of an Amidah, 19 blessings during the week, 7 on Shabbat, etc. And just a chapter of Psalms, Ashrei, as an introduction, and culmination of Aleinu, which culminates the other davenings as well, and then Tachanun sometimes and sometimes not. But it's a relatively short prayer. It also is not part, or not, let's say, a natural part of the routine of someone's day. What I mean by that is, you get up in the morning, and you do things, and you get dressed, and you wash up, and you wash up first, you get dressed, you say some preliminary blessings of the morning, and then you're ready to daven Shacharit. Hopefully you go to shul, and if not, you do it in your home. But Shacharit becomes part of a morning ritual. Routine is a better word, followed perhaps by some breakfast, and now you're ready to confront your working day or your learning day or whatever. When you finish the day's work, you come home. And whatever you do in the evening, it includes the davening of Arvit. It's usually, for most people, the end of the day after the day's work is done. It's so it fits better into a person's schedule and routine. Mincha, as short as it is most often a break in a person's daily routine. He has to keep an eye on the watch, and if it's like at the Israel Center where we have Mincha every day at 1:20, then whatever you're busy with approaching 1:20, your mind is already gearing to be able to take a break from 1:20 to 1:35, 1:40 maximum, usually 1:35, and that's when you daven Mincha, and then you get back to work. Storekeepers have to figure out how they're going to close their stores for the required amount of time for them to go and come to a Mincha. Office buildings have Minchas. Stores have Minchas. You find them all over. There's even available on the internet, I think for phones you have applications, of how to track down a Mincha minion any time of the afternoon, from the earliest possible time until sunset, and where and what time you have Mincha available. There are minion factories that have one after the other after the other. Some places have several going almost simultaneously. One has started 2 minutes ago. Here's another one forming, and there's a third one, etc., etc. But Mincha is spoken of in our sources as something for which a person gets sort of like extra credit because he needs to work it into his daily schedule rather than the natural Shacharit and Arvit. Furthermore, sources tell us that if you look in the Navi, the story of Eliyahu on Mount Carmel with the confrontation against 450 false prophets of Baal, where there was a very dramatic confrontation in front of all of Israel, and Eliyahu's prayers to God to help him out were not answered until the Mincha time, until the time late afternoon, which would be the bringing in the Beit HaMikdash of the afternoon sacrifice, corresponding to which we have the timing for davening Mincha, and that's when Eliyahu was answered. And there's a very emotional conclusion to that portion of the Navi, which we borrow to conclude Yom Kippur at the end of Ne'ilah, with the pronouncement of Hashem Hu HaElokim, Hashem Hu HaElokim, over and over we say it, meaning God is the God, our God is the God. And that's associated with Mincha. So again, as small as it is, we thank Yitzhak Avinu, to whom we attribute the praying to God late afternoon. He did it in the field. That's when Rivka was coming and she saw him in the distance, and that's where they met. So that sort of concludes that section of Chayei Sarah. What comes next in the Torah is kind of surprising. And what we're seeing is Avraham as the progenitor of the Jewish people is pretty much done with his tasks, but the Torah does not send him off into retirement without our knowing what happens. And what's significant is Vayosef Avraham Vayikach Isha Ushma Keturah. Avraham proceeded and took a wife whose name was Keturah. Our tradition says that it was Hagar, whom he had banished at God's command to listen to what Sarah said. This is now after the death of Sarah, and he sends Yitzchak, his son from Sarah, to bring Hagar back to him. And he has his life in retirement, so to speak. He fathers an additional number of children, Zimran, Yokshan, Midan, Midian, Yishbak, and Shuach. That would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The Torah further tells us that Yokshan had Shiva and Dedan, and Dedan had Ashurim and Litushim and Leumim, and Midian had Ephah v'Epher v'Chanoch, another Chanoch, v'Avidah v'Eldaah, kol Eile b'nei Keturah. All of these were the descendants of Keturah from the father Avraham Avinu. But then the Torah has to tell us, Vayitain Avraham et kol asher lo li Yitzchak, he gave all of his possessions and legacy to Yitzchak, Vilivnei hapilag shim asher la Avraham, and to this second wife, let's call her, Avraham, to their children, gave matanot, gifts, vayishalchem me'al Yitzchak beno ba'odenu chai, and while Avraham was still alive, he made it very clear that his lineage continues through Yitzchak, and they went on their own way. And then, finally, the Torah says, ve'ela yemei shnei chayei Avraham, Asher Chai, again the double language of living. Avram lived a full long life, which was 175 years. Again, Ma'at Shana, Vishivim Shana, Vachamesh Shanim. He actually died 5 years younger than his son Yitzchak at 180. And even though we think of 120 as the proverbial full lifespan, 180 also has a significance here, and that Avraham was actually cut a little short for various reasons that commentaries give. And the Torah says that Avraham expired, and he died at a good old age, mature and content, and he was gathered to his people, all various idioms for passing away. He was buried by his sons Yitzchak and Yishmael, in Ma'orat HaMachpelah, in the field of Ephron, former field of Ephron ben Sochar Achiti, Asher al Pnei Mamre, the field which Avraham purchased from Bnei Chet. That's where Avraham had buried Sarah his wife, and that's where now Yitzchak and Yishmael bury Avraham. Subsequently, Yitzchak is buried there, and Rivka, then Yaakov and Leah, noticeably not Rachel, and tradition has it that this was also the burial place of no less than Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve. After this, we have a brief portion with the descent of Yishmael ben Avraham, who was born to Hagar the Egyptian, the handmaiden of Sarah to Avraham. And these are their names, and it lists the names, and it again has that magic number of 12 descendants. We had it with Nachor, including Betuel and Rivka, who came from him. And now we see it that even Yishmael also had the 12 children. Yaakov will, but not yet, have his 12 children, or 12 sons. And the very end is that Yishmael died at 100 years and 30 years and 7 years, 137. And the language, Vayigva, Vayomat, Vayamot, Vayayosef Elamav, same language with Avraham, and our sages tell us that Yishmael did teshuvah, repented his wild previous ways towards the end of his life, and died as a righteous individual. These were the years of Yishmael. They dwelt from Chavilah until Shur, That was near Egypt, Boacha Ashura, al Pnei Chol Echav Nafal. Over all of his brothers he dwelt, towards Assyria. The fact that the Torah tells us also about Yishmael, and later also about Esav, indicates that these are significant individuals, even though they are outside our definition of the Jewish lineage, and we need to know something about them as well, even when they turn out to be bitter enemies, as the descendants of both turned out. That's pretty much Chaye Sarah. There are no mitzvot among the 613 in Chaye Sarah. There are midot, qualities, and customs that we get from there, even though burial of the dead is taken as a mitzvah in Parshat Ki Teitzei. It is here that we actually see the process of crying, of eulogizing, of burial, acquiring a burial place and burial. And we very much have taken that as a pattern for Jewish history. Many, many Jews buy their plots, or at least sign up for a fraternal order to have access to a cemetery and a cemetery plot after 120 years, as the expression goes. And it's a very, very special thing. Bringing a person to burial is a big mitzvah, and that our forefathers and mothers show us the lead. I would say we have classic examples in these sedras at this time of the year of Ma'asei Avot Siman Lebanim. The deeds of our ancestors are patterns, sedars, indicators of their children. That would be us, sometimes in positive ways, sometimes in negative ways, and that we'll talk about at some time in the future. But for now, let me wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.